everybody. It's time for the Mainland Podcast. We're at episode 128. I am Michael Citro, the founder and managing editor of themainland.com. We, of course, cover all things Orlando City, Orlando Pride, and when they return, Orlando City B. Joining me, as always, is my co-host, David Rowe, another one of our writers. David, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing dandy, or as dandy as I can be after quite the up and down weekend that we had. But, you know, we get through. It's what we do.
It was a very, very bad lack of goals this weekend.
yes.
The Pride didn't score a goal. The Lions didn't score a goal. The U.S. men only scored one goal. It was not a big goal weekend. There was not a lot of moments of celebration. But we will soldier on, and we'll talk about Orlando City's trip to Yankee Stadium to play on the futsal field inside Yankee Stadium against New York City FC. It was a very much another makeshift lineup for Jason Kreis, of course, with yet another center back going down with injury. Chris Schuler getting surgery on his broken arm during the week and being out of commission. RJ Allen moves inside and gets a start at center back next to veteran center back Tony Rocha in his second start there. you know, we saw the introduction of Donny Toya, his first game of the year, and you know, and Will Johnson at right back. So we've got two midfielders. You've got a right back playing center back, and you've got a guy making his season debut. That was not ideal by any stretch. And
no.
The team actually still didn't have Dom Dwyer. But, you know, ultimately, Dave, you see the lineup and you saw the performance, that was not a bad performance, all things considered. It was just that goals change games, and New York City got them, and Orlando City didn't get them, and that was ultimately all she wrote, because once it was 1-0, they were chasing the game, and had an excellent opportunity early in the second half, of course, to get back in it with a penalty, and Kolesjian hits the post on the penalty, just, you know, putting the cherry on a crap game for Sasha, in my opinion. I thought that he was pretty bad overall in the course of the evening for a player of his quality. It was a poor game, and you know, a couple of posts for Josue Coleman, and you know, at the end of the game they tacked two more on, one that I still have no idea why it didn't get touched by anybody. And off a free kick, and then the you know, the third goal was largely a team that had just couldn't compete anymore, just had been beaten down mentally, physically all night. But you know, ultimately, I was extremely happy with the performance for at least the first hour of the game, and I thought that against New York City the first time, despite having more quote-unquote starting pieces at the back, they you know, they played much better this trip to Yankee Stadium than the first trip, and yet they got beat worse.
Yeah, I went back and listened last week, and I remember saying, hey, good news, everybody, they're going to do better this time, and I was wrong. But like you say, we were also right. They did play better, just the result was worse. Goals change games is so true. If, you know, either of Josue's goals, you know, don't hit a post, or, you know, Sasha converts the PK, well, we're talking about a much different match. You know, suddenly, you know, they're not down 2-0 and giving up that last one. And who knows what could have happened. I think what was funny is when Sasha missed that PK, I even said to people I was watching the game with, I was like, oh, that was our chance. And sure enough, somewhere else I read on Twitter or somebody else that somebody said the exact same thing, that I think it was their kid said the exact same thing that I did, which either says that I've got the mind of a child or that the child was absolutely right. I'm going to go with the second. Plenty of disappointment to go around. Plenty of, you know, we've spoken in the past about it, you know, game of inches, and especially when it comes to the ball hitting the post. Well, maybe it was just that the field was small, and so the goals were slightly smaller, even though I know that's not actually the case, and so they bounced outside instead of going inside. Who knows? It just I don't think we ought to talk about it that much, to be honest with you.
Yeah, now it's important to note that New York City fans will tell you that they also hit the woodwork twice, but they hit it two times in a row and then scored on the third rebound of that. So it doesn't really count the same as the three off the woodwork that Orlando City had. I was like you. I watching the game, I thought when Kleshin missed the penalty, I thought, well, it's just not Orlando City's night because you just can't do that. I felt like if Kleshin puts that ball in, you know, just 3 minutes into the second half, you really have a new game, not only because the score is tied at one at that point, but because I think it puts pressure on the New York City as the home side a little bit. And also I think it gives the visitors a lift. You come right out of the break, you get a goal, you're back in the game. And I think that the team was already playing well. So, I mean, there's no reason to think that they couldn't have added to that had they had the confidence of doing that. But I think there was a visible sign of deflation after that, you know, for a few minutes, even though there were some more good chances created after that. But it was just a tough thing to take, because if you look at the way that makeshift back line played and the defensive midfielders in front of them, and it wasn't Yuri Rosell's best game either. In fact, I think it may have been his worst game so far with Orlando City. And of course the opponent has a lot to do with that. You know, I think that the back line held up quite nicely. They didn't give up too many really good scoring chances until late in the game, when, you know, it was already two goals behind and you know, just trying to get out of there at that point. But, you know, I thought that, you know, certainly for having RJ Allen and Tony Rocha as your center backs, it was it was a very noble showing by the back line.
Oh, no doubt. You know, we joked that, you know, you were going to get called in to play center back. And we were actually, you know, a man or two closer to that being a reality. It's crazy that the hodgepodge of a back line that Jason has had to put out there. And I agree that, you know, when you have that many guys out of position, it's for them to the score line does not speak to how they played, you know, that back line played, especially because some of those, you know, like that ping pong goal where they, you know, it hits off the bar twice. And I don't blame Joe for that one either. I mean, you know, he didn't get any help with that. And there's only so many times you can turn your head back and forth before it goes in. So it was a weird night, where the ball is going to go their way. It didn't go our way. And you know, nobody had a great game. It was disappointing, but you know, let's be honest, you and I both predicted a loss going into it.
Yeah, what's going on when we're both right?
Well, we were kind of right. I mean, we both predicted 2-1, and it wasn't that. So
correct, but you know, we can't account for Sasha Kleshin missing a penalty.
No, that's true. us being right is usually a bad idea.
So the team's only been shut out twice all year, both times in Yankee Stadium, which is weird considering how small the pitch is and how the ball rattles around. And, again, to hit the post three times, not your night when that happens, especially when one of them is on a penalty. So, you know, you got four losses in a row. It's starting to look pretty serious. But, of course, there's always light at the end of the tunnel here on the Mainland Podcast, and this week it comes to us in the form of players returning to training, which is good. We don't know really how far away they are from getting back in the lineup, but we do know that they're at least back on the practice field, which is a huge thing because this team needs to get healthy, particularly one Dom Dwyer needs to be healthy for this team, because we've seen this. I think that you can maybe take, you know, some measure of respect for the coaching staff trying to stay with a lineup that had been successful, but with Dom Dwyer out, I don't think you can run the 4-2-3-1 anymore, because we've seen that Stefano Pino can't function in that role. We've seen that a false nine with Coleman doesn't really work in that role, although, quite honestly, Coleman could have had a brace at least. But it hasn't worked, so maybe give him some help and maybe it's time to go back to the 4-4-2. I know the reluctance here is that you probably have to take Iguita or Rossell out of the lineup to do that. Rossell was brought in to be the base of the diamond, so if you go back to the diamond 4-4-2, you're likely taking out Iguita, who has been the best player on the team over the last month. I mean, you know, that's what we voted on in our mainland awards for May. So it's difficult to do that, but I think sometimes you got to make the difficult decision when everything's going against you like these injuries have been, and it would be nice to see some fluctuations, or at least for part of the game. And again, that it's really hard to make that switch when you see how well the team played overall against Chicago and overall at New York, just didn't get the results. So, you know, it's on the one hand, you'd like to maybe see the change, and on the other hand, you go, well, it really would have worked if somebody would have just put the damn ball in the net. So it's kind of a catch-22. It's really a difficult situation. I'm glad I'm, you know, my job security doesn't depend on making those decisions, but you know, we'll see what happens moving forward. We're in a congested and largely away part of the schedule now. The Lions will go tomorrow night, or tonight as this podcast drops, to Miami to play in the U.S. Open Cup against Miami United FC, an NPSL team. We'll talk a little bit about that later. And then on to Vancouver, and then at Montreal. So it's a very difficult back and forth across the country and north of the border and all of that. So it's not, the schedule's not a friend to Orlando City right now, and they could use some players back. But give me your man of the match, Dave, for a 3-0 loss at New York City.
Man of the match, I've got to go with Jose Coleman. You know, at least he was taking some chances. You know, did he have his best game ever? No. But he was, unfortunately, probably the best player we had, especially because Christian was a little quieter than he's been recently. So, yeah, for me, even just getting some chances, you know, that was enough for him to get man of the match this time.
I am going to go with two-time podcast guest Tony Rocha. I thought especially in the first half, Tony was the best player on the field for Orlando City. And I think he didn't have as good a second half as he did the first, as he wore down a little bit and New York got a little bit used to what they could do with him. But I thought overall he had a great effort. The only thing that he did switch off on the third goal, but he was far from the only one that did that. You know, you've got five or six guys around there and they all expect the first one to go in. It doesn't. Then they all expect the second one to go in and it doesn't. And so it's easy to get caught ball watching when you just expect that the ball's going to go in. So it's a little hard to fault a tired midfielder playing center back at that point in the 87th minute, but I'm not letting him off the hook for it. It was a mistake, and he shouldn't have done it. But again, he wasn't the only one. Allen stood around. There was I believe it may have been Rossell in the area. Will Johnson was the only one that actually tried to react on that third shot. So unfortunate, but I thought Rocha really played hard. He played well. He had a number of interceptions and dribbles. He got forward into the attack, and at one point he was in the box. He went into the penalty area.
Oh, yeah.
And he was calling for the ball, and of course he didn't get it back because, hey, center back running into the box. But we've seen that actually work before, so Jonathan Spector made it work in the opener, so maybe give him the ball back if he's going to run that far. But who knows? Tony Rocha gets my man, and Coleman gets yours. So we're a little split this week, but that's okay. Variety, as they say, is the spice of life.
Indeed.
So speaking of getting players back, we did learn that Yoshimar Yotun, as expected, is on the final Peru World Cup roster. He is not going to be back for a while. He is definitely missed because I think as much as even when Rossell has played very well, and Iguita's played very well, neither of those guys can do what Yoshi does in terms of getting forward into the attack and really stressing a defense out because now they've got to deal with Yotun as well as Merrim and Kleschen and Mueller and whoever's playing striker at that given moment. So he really adds a dimension that is not replicatable on the team. So he will be missed. But on the other hand, Egypt did not elect to take Amro Tarek to Russia for the World Cup. So Tarek, in our most desperate position of need, is as we speak, flying across the country, or across the ocean, actually, from Italy is where he departed from, to arrive and help out his teammates with Orlando City. Apparently, Jason Kreis is taking the entire team to Miami and then on to Vancouver, the entire roster, which means everybody's training.
And hey, that's something.
Good news. That means Scott Sutter is training, and Jonathan Spector, who we know was cleared to train last week, he's back in training. And
Dom Dwyer.
Dom, and yeah, it's great. And we'll see what happens. I think really right now the one that's behind everyone else in terms of when they might return is probably Lamine Sané, which is weird because we didn't think he'd miss a game. Yeah. But it is what it is. So we'll deal with it and move on. Chris Schuler, we've already been told they're aiming to get him back in the lineup by the Vancouver game, which is Saturday night. And, of course, he'll be playing with a cast on. And as any good Lion, he got a purple one.
Well, and he gets tough guy of the year so far. I mean, you know, playing with a broken arm, I don't care who you are. You're winning that vote from me. Yotun, congratulations on, you know, getting to go and represent your country in World Cup. You will be missed here in Orlando, though. And Amro, condolences you don't get to represent your team, but you will be loved when you come back because we desperately need somebody at center back. So it's, you know, love for both and, you know, good luck to Yoshi. But Amro, we are so glad that you're coming back.
Absolutely. All right, let's change gears a little bit here. We'll talk about the Pride finishing out their road swing at Seattle. They had no Alex Morgan. They had no Ashlyn Harris. We knew all of that. What we didn't know last week was no Marta, no Rachel Hill.
Yep.
So it's like, okay, is there any striker? Is there a striker left? Is there someone who can play up front? You know, it was kind of like the opposite problem as Orlando City. It's like, am I next in line to play for the Pride up at top? No, that's not the case. Sydney LaRue played up at the top along with Chioma Obogugu and Kristen Edmonds. Those two played the wings, and sort of a 4-2-3-1 this week, and probably a good move by Tom Sormani to change the lineup a little bit on that. Obviously, he forced his hand a little bit with some players out, but and of course, Allie Krieger's still out with her injury. So he was missing a lot of bullets for the gun and went into a pretty tough place to score goals. Seattle's been very, very difficult to score against. Don't believe they've given up a goal in the first half all season.
It's actually, I think, the first like 59, 60 minutes of the game. Yeah, it's something
it's
insane.
And yet, you know, Seattle was all over Orlando in the first half, especially early. But the best chance to score in the first half, and indeed in the game, belonged to the Pride. There was a long drive by Carson Pickett that found the head of Alana Kennedy on a set piece. Kennedy doinked it off the crossbar, because that's the theme of this week, hitting that woodwork. And it fell perfectly to Sydney LaRue with a gaping net. And for some reason, she tried to just tuck it inside the post as close as possible and missed the net from just a couple yards out, Dave.
Yeah, that was disappointing. Not sure what happened there. Maybe trying to be too cute with the ball. Who knows? But you're right. That was absolutely the best chance that anybody had that night on a very... you know, Seattle was mainly better during the first half. Orlando mainly better during the second half. I thought Carson Pickett did a really good job of getting balls in. You know, she was the one that seemed to be taking the free kicks as well. I thought she did. You know, if you go back and watch that again, her placement on them did provide opportunities. the team just wasn't able to, you know, to convert any of them, unfortunately.
I'd say it's probably a fair assessment to say that Carson Pickett had her best game in a Pride uniform so far.
I'd agree. Yeah, it was enough that she was, you know, one of the mentions in the five takeaways.
Yeah, I thought she played a really good game, and I thought that the team did a good job of creating chances in the second half, and it always seemed like they were going to score at some point. I thought Emily Van Eggman was going to put it in. Great save by Williams, take nothing away, but it was I think there was some room there on the right side to maybe put that a little closer to the post and score that goal. But, you know, in the heat of the moment and you're looking and you see all this space, you just shoot it at the net. And then when the goalkeeper comes out of nowhere and makes the save, it's a little bit surprising. She is up for save of the week for that, so it's not a bad save. A chance I thought that chance and the LaRue chance really cost the team 3 points, because both of those were probably ones that those particular players will want to have over again.
Yeah, it's the Sid chance. It was definitely wanted that one back. And there was actually several, goal of the week or save of the week contenders in that. So, I mean, it was ended up being fairly defensive from that standpoint. But you know, the thing to focus on is Orlando. That was the end of a pretty nasty stretch of games where they got a ton of points, mm-hmm. including a point at Seattle, which, as you mentioned, you know, at the start, not an easy place to play.
Yeah, I mentioned at this run of six games that I thought that 2-2-2 would be a great record to just to keep them afloat and keep them in contention and then head into a better part of the schedule. But they actually did better than 2-2-2. They went 3-1-2. So, outstanding trip, really. The only hiccup came at home, and they were within seconds of getting a point in that one, too.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, that stretch of games, and we mentioned it, we've been mentioning it all year, how it sets up early and then sets up later better, to come out of that with as many points as they did, really, and with all the you know, injuries and shifting lineups and all of that, to come through that with that many points, I think Tom has done an excellent job of managing the players and the schedule, you know, or as best as he can, mm-hmm. Those away games to set the Pride up nicely going forward.
And one Camilla should be back in the lineup soon. Maybe that Sky Blue game coming up a little later in the month. It would be nice to have Camilla back on the field doing her thing, because I think that's something that the Pride is really I think more than anything, they miss Camilla's swagger. She's got a swagger about her, and I really think, you know, not only does she set up goals and score goals, mm-hmm. but I think more than anything, she gives that team a little bit of, beyond confidence. She gives them, like I said, a swagger, maybe an arrogance about them that makes them difficult to deal with.
Yeah, because she has utmost confidence, and when, you know, especially when she's, you know, pushing forward with the ball. So, and then, like you say, everybody else plays off of that. And then if you have her, and then you also have Marta providing the ultimate experience inside there. And if we get our strikers back, you know, we have Alex. I think Rachel's had a really great season so far as well. You know, when all the pieces are there, this is an incredibly hard team to deal with. I know that we've had the troubles with North Carolina, but you know, North Carolina once again is one of the best teams in the league, if not the best team in the league. Mm-hmm. So and to play them to all what should have, you know, really been a draw, speaks highly of how good this team is. And like you say, once we get a piece here or two back, just like with the men's, I think it's they're going to be incredibly hard for most teams to deal with.
Yeah, I mean, when you're talking about like people like Camilla, Marta, and Emily Van Eggman all on the field at the same time with their passing quality, very difficult to collapse on one of them or to deny one of them the ball. So yeah. It really does create headaches. And I think Orlando Pride's biggest scoring outbursts are yet ahead, which is sounds like hyperbole when you consider they put up five on Chicago on the road, but I really think this is a team that could score six or seven goals if they're firing on all cylinders with everybody healthy. So we have that to look forward to, hopefully, in the second half. One thing we didn't talk about, that Seattle and Orlando Pride game, was the Pride debut of Haley Koppmeyer. And Haley Koppmeyer goes up to play against her old team. One of the toughest things for any goalkeeper is you haven't played any competitive games all season long, and now you're asked to go into a tough situation on the road against a good team and do your job. And Haley Koppmeyer did her job. She gets a clean sheet in her very first game with Orlando Pride, and for my money, player of the match.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, she kept them in it. Like you said, going up against her former team, a good team, getting the clean sheet, up for save of the week, and, you know, go out and vote if there's still time, everybody, depending on when you're listening to this. I mentioned before that it's incredibly nice having that level of a backup. To Ashlyn Harris. That is a luxury that most teams in this league do not have. You know, Koppmeyer could start for a great many teams in the league, and for her to be there for us when, you know, Harris gets pulled up to the national team or, you know, has an injury is, like I said, that's an incredible luxury. And I hope that everybody is appreciative of that because – like I say, that's not the norm.
Yeah, it's not. And, you know, Orlando has been blessed with that, with formerly having Aubrey Bledsoe, who is now the Spirit starter, and of course, now Haley Koppmeyer. So, you know, Ashlyn's, you know, she's not old by any stretch of the imagination, especially compared to us. But she's, you know, you know, she's got a lot of wear and tear on her body. She makes a lot of acrobatic saves and hits the ground a lot. So she's definitely someone who is prone to missing a few games here and there. Always great to have a solid backup, and Koppmeyer definitely provided that this weekend at Seattle. So good job to her. Dave, we're going to continue our Pride discussion coming up with our special guest. We'll get to that interview right after this. All right, joining us on the Mainland Podcast this week, we're happy to have with us from the Orlando Pride, Emily Van Egmond. Emily, thanks for being on the podcast.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Doing well, as are the Pride, especially on the road. Five unbeaten on the road now for Orlando. But I wanted to ask you to start off, just sort of, you've had a few games now since you've come over after, you know, your Asian Cup run. I wanted to just know if you feel like you're settling into the team now, or do you still think that there's a little ways to go before you're hitting your peak?
Yeah, I think I'm starting to settle in somewhat okay. I guess it's always hard coming to a new team, but I felt very welcome from the get-go, and obviously knowing a few of the girls here before I came has been a big help. And obviously, you know, with Tommy being my coach back in Australia all those years ago as well has helped. And yeah, just really enjoying myself and really happy to be here in Orlando.
Well, we're glad to have you. I can tell you that. Like Michael said, you've been here for a little bit now. Can you tell us your impressions of the NWSL? How it's a little bit different, or you know what the challenges are as opposed to other places you've played?
Yeah, I think with the NWSL, it's a game every week. You know, some of the other competitions around the world maybe don't have. You know, every team is strong as what you have here in the NWSL. You know, in Germany, for example, there's, you know, four or five teams, and then there's a bit of a gap. But whereas here in America, every game's a game, and I think that's what you want as a footballer. You want to be challenged, and you want to be in the best environment possible, and I definitely think that America provides that. So.
Well, one of the things that we've been talking about on this show is the stretch of six games with five of them on the road, and the one non-road game was against first place unbeaten North Carolina. And you guys have gotten through that stretch very well with a 3-1-2 record, three wins, one loss, two draws. How excited are you to get through that segment of the schedule with a good record intact and knowing that you're going to have a lot more home games down the stretch?
Yeah, we've had a fair few games on the road, like you said, and the team's obviously done an extremely good job in those away games. And it was a bit of a shame against North Carolina at home to drop points because you obviously want to be winning at home at all costs. But again, like you said, I think we've done really well on the road, and and to have those home games at the back end of the season is going to be extremely important for us. And, I think we definitely need to capitalize on that advantage.
Now, you guys have had, of course, players coming in, players coming out. You were out early on. Then you come back. Other players are gone here and there. What have been the challenges, with the squad rotation the way it's been?
Yeah, it's obviously not easy having people coming in and out of any squad. But in saying that, I think all around the squad's extremely competitive, and we have a great squad. And anyone who's called upon does exceptionally well. And I think that's been the case this season for the Pride. And like you said, I think the players coming in and out, I guess the biggest thing is cohesion and getting that balance. But we have a really good squad here, and it's super competitive at training, and you can't ask for anything more than that.
Now, Emily, I want to go back to the Chicago game before the Seattle game and just ask you about that game. You guys came out strong, quick two goals. Chicago was able to rally and level the score. But then from that point on, it was almost like a light switch got flipped, and you guys went on to win quite easily on the road. I mean, nobody goes to Toyota Park and wins and puts five on the board against a good Chicago Red Stars team. What was said on the field or in the halftime locker room talk that really got you guys motivated and playing great soccer in the second half of that game?
Yeah, I think just the fact that, went 2-0 up early and then to concede two goals probably wasn't the best. And then I think it's just like you said, I think, something clicked, and I think everyone was just on the same page and really wanted to win and get those 3 points. And, at the end of the day, we did. And I think that's a huge positive to be able to finish a game out like that, scoring 5 goals, obviously on an away trip, never easy. And to be able to walk away from Chicago doing that, I think it's extremely pleasing and just shows the potential that we have with the fight this year.
Now, following that Chicago game, of course, you all had to go to Seattle and down a few players. We're able to get out of there with a result, though. How was what didn't you guys do that you were hoping to do? I mean, obviously, get 3 points, but was there a was there something that was missing that you weren't able to pull that one all the way?
But I think we had a very slow start to the game, and again, we came out in the second half and started to compete, and I think it was a much better game for us the second half. And I think a draw in the end was probably fair. I thought they definitely had the better of the game in the first half, and then I thought we were maybe a little bit on top with the chances that we had in the second half. But again, you go into every single game wanting to win, and we're trying to make that a priority this year, the Pride, and we'll be looking to definitely capitalize on that with these next few games ahead.
Now, you came very, very close to scoring a goal with the Pride at Seattle. Unfortunately, it was a good save. My question for you is, what can we expect from the Emily Van Egmond goal celebration when you put the ball in the net?
I'm not too sure, to be honest. I think it just depends on the day. And obviously, given the circumstances, but I'm not much of a celebrator. I'm just happy if our team wins, and I don't really care who scores, to be honest. So yeah.
Well, we look forward to that first one. You mentioned that, of course, you played with some of the other girls on the team. Is there anybody that you haven't played with that you've connected with or has impressed you?
Yeah, I think we have, some world-class players on our team, and, obviously linking up with the likes of Marta and Alex Morgan has been a great experience so far. And, I'm really enjoying it being able to learn off some of these players, the experience they have, has been awesome for me. And again, I think if we can just get that cohesion right with the team, I think we have a lot of potential this year.
So what do you, when you guys discuss your goals as a team, obviously you're talking about the next match and the next match after that and the next match after that, but this is a team that's built to go deep in the playoffs. And is that something that, you know, like how does Tom work with his goals for the season? Do you have that on a board somewhere? This is one of our goals, is to A, make the playoffs, B, you know, maybe get a first round bye, C, make the final, that kind of thing. What is it like to set goals as a team with the Pride?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, that's the main priority, is to make the playoffs. You know, I think we're a team that's here to win, and we're a team that's here to compete. And I don't think we'll be accepting the fall short at all of that playoff goal. So, yeah, I definitely think that's the main priority for our team. And, again, with players coming in and out, I guess just trying to find that cohesion and that balance. And I definitely think we're on a really good way here now with the Pride. And, you know, with Tom, he's obviously assembled a really strong squad. So it's exciting, and it's a great team and club to be part of, and I'm just super excited to be here.
Well, speaking of Tom, like you said, you had played for him before. What's it like being back with him, and is there any differences, you know, him as a coach in the NWSL versus where, when you played with him before?
His jokes have gotten worse. I really enjoyed my time under Tommy when I first came to the national team, and I have a huge amount of respect for him as a coach. And yeah, just really excited and humbled to be able to be here and play for him again, and you know, learn as much as I can from him, because you know, at the end of the day, he was the one who gave me my first international call up. So yeah, I have a huge amount of respect for him, and just really excited to be able to link back up with him again in probably the best league in the world at the moment, the NWSL. So exciting.
Now, speaking of Tom, you know, obviously he was able to convince you to come to Orlando. How did this process take place for you to arrive in Orlando? When did it start? And just kind of take us through it. What happened to get Emily Van Egmond to Orlando?
I was in Germany for the last 2.5 years, and I just wanted to change. And obviously with the World Cup coming up in France, I thought it would be best, you know, to maybe look back into America, as the American League obviously links really well with the Australian League. And, you know, Tommy reached out, and we were in communication for a little bit. And, you know, at the end of the day, I wanted to play for him, and I'm just really happy that it worked out in the end. So, yeah.
Now, switching gears a little bit, you guys have a little bit of a break, but next up is Sky Blue, and it's going to be at home, which I'm sure will be a nice change of venue for y'all since it's been a little while. What is it like, you know, playing in Orlando City Stadium for you? Not just the atmosphere as in the people, but speak to that, but also the atmosphere as in, you know, the humidity and the heat and all.
Yeah, well, it's definitely very hot, but you know, in Australia we play also in summer and in the heat, and you know, certain parts of Australia have humidity, obviously not like Florida, but it's a little similar. But you know, like, the stadium's nice, you know, it's a great field, obviously the fans are awesome, and I think everyone, it's safe to say that everyone loves home games, so.
Emily, when you you know, you come to a team and you've played attacking midfielder, and you come to a team that's got Marta on it, you know, how do you approach that? Do you think I'm gonna have to compete with Marta for playing time? Do you sit back and watch her to learn from her? Did you get assurances that you guys would be playing together and in separate roles? I mean, how did that all come together, and how do you approach that?
Obviously very humble, but you got to play and train alongside, you know, one of the best players in the world. It is awesome, and just to take as much experience as I can from her, because I mean, she's obviously extremely successful and she's great at what she does. And you know, it's really good for me to be able to link up with a player of Marta's caliber. And just really excited to, you know, to see her on the field and see what she does and, you know, learn as much as I can from a player of her caliber.
Now, speaking of one of your other teammates, Alana Kennedy, I believe you all are roommates, and of course she's been here a little while longer. How has she introduced you to the Orlando community? What adventures have you guys gone on?
Yeah, good. Obviously, having Lance here has been a massive help, and it's been awesome to be able to have a fellow Aussie here with me. And yeah, just, you know, even before coming, just the stuff that she had said about the club, it was all really positive and didn't have a bad word to say at all. And yeah, it's really nice to have obviously another Australian here.
Have you found you know, some favorite places that you like to go in Orlando?
Yeah, we have a few coffee shops that we like. I'm a big fan of the Hunger Street tacos. They're awesome. And obviously we love our acai bowls down in Australia, so there's definitely some good spots in Orlando for an acai bowl. So it's been really good, and yeah, just enjoying my time every day here.
Well, we're glad to have you, of course. Other than Alana, is there anybody else that you've you know, gone on little adventures with or explored either in Orlando or even went on the road?
Oh, we've been so busy, but everyone's been awesome. But I've also known Tony. I played with Tony back in 2012 at West New York Flash. So I've known Tony for a while and a couple of the girls when I had a short stint in Seattle as well. So it's a pretty tight-knit group, I would say. And, you know, we've got a really good team culture kind of happening. So, good.
Well, Emily, before we let you go, we always ask this whenever a Pride player is on. What is your favorite story surrounding Tom Sormani? Give us your best Tom story.
My best Tom story? Oh, gosh. I have no idea. Probably just how bad his jokes are. They're just, like, such bad dad jokes. Like, I don't really know, to be honest. You'll have to ask me that at a later date so I can think about it.
All right, we'll have you back on, and we'll let you think about it between now and then. But yeah, it's good to know that we're not the only ones that make bad dad jokes.
Yeah, because we do.
Emily Van Engman of the Orlando Pride, thank you so much for being with us on the podcast, and the best of luck to you the rest of the season.
Thanks, guys, and thanks so much for having me.
All right. Well, thanks again to Emily Van Engman for being our guest this week. She's fun to talk to. First time we've had her on the show. And, of course, we have the in now to get her back on the show as she gives careful consideration to her favorite Tom Sormani story. And I look forward to hearing that.
That's an incredibly important question that needs to be answered. And to all the Pride players who I'm sure are listening, when we have you on in the future, make sure you have your Tom story ready.
Yep. Be ready to go. Be ready to roll. We know you all have a Tom story. And Tom is a delight, so we love hearing stories about him. Let's get into some stoppage time here, Dave. We've got some more things to talk about before we get out of here. We'll get to our mailbag here in a minute. The U.S. Played this weekend, and as mentioned, they scored the only goal out of the teams that we root for. over the weekend. A little trip to Ireland and a little bit different look, a few more veterans on the pitch, but plenty of youth playing for the U.S. side in Dublin. And it was kind of – Ireland kind of controlled most of the match, but the U.S. did have some opportunities and, in fact, took the lead just prior to the half with a Bobby Wood toe poke off a Matt Miazga header. So it was looking good. Orlando City, U.S. men's national team goes into the locker room up 1-0 over Ireland. And, you know, Ireland came out second half. They got their goal. It always looked like they would get one at some point, and then they did get one. It was 1-1. And then it looked like they got a second one, but it was ruled offside, but it might not have been offside. But then again, the first one might have been offside. So maybe that all cancels out. Because it certainly looked like the first one was probably off and the second one probably wasn't, even though it was called off. So those kind of canceled each other out, and it was 1-1, and that seemed okay. And it seemed like everything was right with the world. The U.S. was obviously not playing a weakened Bolivian side. You got a look at what, you know, a little bit of a reality check for everybody who were, you know, who was saying that was the squad they should have sent to Trinidad and Tobago. it still looked like the U.S. would get out of Ireland with their first ever result, their first ever point out of Ireland. In the closing moments, though, Ireland at the death scores a heartbreaker and makes it 2-1, and the U.S. Will go to France with nothing from their trip to Ireland except for maybe a Guinness hangover or something.
Well, some of those guys, I don't know if they're old enough to have a Guinness, but...
but then Europe has different rules than we have, so...
That's true. But regardless, it was like you said. This was not a young Bolivia team that they were taking on, and we did see some other faces come back. You know, Bobby Wood and Christian Pulisic is in his off season now, well deserved. So it's still a. Everybody needs to remember this is we're talking about a 4-year process going forward with this. The Bobby Wood goal is great. They didn't control this match the way they controlled the previous one against Bolivia. Didn't expect them to. Mm-hmm. But like you said, other than that, that heartbreaker right at the end, if they come out of that with a 1-1 draw, you would have felt pretty good. I mean, I still felt pretty good given that I wasn't expecting the same thing that we got from the Bolivia match. I still think that we have a lot of talent that's really young and is going to hopefully peak at the right time for the next World Cup or even the one after that. And I still think the future's bright. This is a, like I said, it's a long thing that we're talking about. So don't live and die on every friendly result, or you'll just your heart is going to explode. So enjoy watching these guys develop, and that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, we got a good look at a few more youngsters. We got Luca Della Torre out there. We got Shaq Moore out there. It's good to see these guys, get them some international experience. It's only going to help them later. I thought that Weston McKennie did some good things. I thought Tim Weah looked good. He didn't look out of his element. He could have been a little bit sharper in the final third, but he didn't look out of his element. He looks like he's a player throughout the next cycle. I mean, he may become a regular on the pitch, even in the next meaningful tournament.
Oh, without a doubt. The previous match and this one, he's shown, why he's one of those names that gets mentioned every time you talk about the up and comers with the anybody in the U.S. So everybody mentions Christian, and rightly so. But Tim is definitely making some noise, and I think if he can. If he can continue to develop along the way he is, it only means good things for the U.S.
Yeah, a little bit concerned with the young center backs that the U.S. is deploying. I mean, of course, these were guys that have played before. Not sold yet on Carter Vickers, but I know he's got potential. He's got upside. He hasn't realized yet. Miazga is another one. I mean, he got pretty much turned around and inside out on the final goal. The buildup that led to the final goal was him basically getting undressed. And so that was a little bit concerning, but at the same time, these may not be the first choice guys, and down the road, there may be other guys that are first choice guys. I thought, was Palmer Brown against Bolivia that played pretty well. Zimmerman is another guy who's going to be in the mix for a while. So we'll see how it goes. I didn't think that they did that well, but they're playing, stronger competition, and we'll see where it goes. The upside is still tremendous, and I look forward to seeing this young U.S. side develop. They're going to have their toughest test to date this weekend against France, so that'll be interesting to keep an eye on.
One way you get better is to play better opponents.
Absolutely. So that was the first loss, Dave, since Bruce Arena left as head coach of the U.S. men's national team.
And
Surprisingly.
that tells you exactly everything you need to know, is that thought didn't even cross my mind. It wasn't a concern right now, because I'm very much in, I just want to, let's just work through the things, let's develop the players, let's get US soccer federation fixed, let's work on all of this. Wins and losses right now, especially in friendlies. If they win, great. If they lose, but somebody does something good, I'm all good with all of it right now.
Yeah. All right. So the U.S. women are also going to be in action. Two friendlies against China before we talk again here on the podcast. They'll play Thursday and Tuesday in Rio Tinto out in Utah, and then Cleveland, I believe, the second one. So that will be interesting to see the U.S. women against China. China's a good, solid test for them going into the Tournament of Nations and also ahead of World Cup qualifying. This is the kind of team that they need to be playing. That China actually has the second most amount of wins against the U.S. out of any country with 9, and Norway, surprisingly, has 19. They're not even close to being challenged.
Wow.
But China also is the team that has played the U.S. the second most amount of times, 56. And by the time these two friendlies are over, they will be tied with Canada for the most times that are most frequent opponent for the U.S. women's national team. Of course, the Prides, Alex Morgan is part of the team. Ashlyn Harris also, although you may not hear her name at all in those two friendlies.
I always look forward to not watching Ashlyn Harris play for the U.S. women's national team.
Well, Jill gonna Jill. So we'll see how it goes. Rose Lavelle was added to the camp, so we'll see if she makes her return to the international game as well. And we look forward to cheering on the U.S. women's national team. We'll talk about those games next week. Dave, let's get to our mailbag. Ask the Mainland Podcast anything. You can do it two different ways. You can email us at themainland@gmail.com, or you can hit us up on Twitter. We are at the Mainland, at symbol, and the Mainland. Make sure it's MANE, not MAIN. And hit us up with that hashtag AskTMLPC, and we will read your questions on the air. We'll give you an answer. It might not be the one you're looking for. It's not the answer you deserve, but it's the answer you need, or something like that. Maybe it's not the answer you need, but the answer you deserve. I don't know. It's one of those two things.
How about it's the answer that you have to give.
It's the answer we got for you. That's what it is. So we've got only a couple of questions this week. I didn't put out the call for questions early enough to get people to respond, but we have one outstanding one from Twitter, and we also have an email. And I don't know if Mark sent you anything this week.
No, he has not. He's trying to lose the friend of the podcast label here.
Designation. All right. Well, Ryan Smith wants to pick up that friend of the podcast designation. In fact, his tweet says "friend of the pod" here. I might have
All
buried
right.
he might have buried this one in the replies, but here it is again. He actually asked this question on May 22nd, and somehow it got lost. But I apologize for that, Ryan. It's my organizational skills or lack thereof. It has nothing to do with anything else. But yeah, we will go on to answer your question here, which is it's an interesting one. It says, you are the coach of Orlando's first seven-a-side co-ed team, and you have to field two or more women at all times, and of course, out of the seven, and then you get two on your bench. What's your lineup? Dave, what is your lineup, seven-a-side, making it up with the Pride, and I'm assuming Pride in Orlando City players only here. I'm assuming.
Okay, so we're
it's not just anybody you want, anywhere.
Right. So I'm assuming that Pride in Orlando City, and he wants full lineup, not just the women that we're choosing.
Correct. He wants your seven starters and your two bench players.
Okay. Let's see. Well, let's go with the starters. I'm going to go with Bendik in goal, and I'm gonna have to like count on my fingers here, make sure I get the right amount of people. All right. Let me do Bendik, Spectre, Sané. Right now, actually, well, no, you know what?
Assume everybody's healthy. Just go.
Yeah, I was going to say, assuming everybody's healthy. Yeah. Okay, so Yoshi. All right, I'm getting up. I'm moving my head up the field here. All right, and then Marta, Alex, and Dom for my starting seven.
All right, who's on your bench? I'm assuming then, you have another woman, another female player in reserve.
Yep, so then on my bench, let's see, who am I going to sub out? I'm going to go Krieger on the bench for the women, and Mueller, I'm going to give the young kid a chance.
All right, that's pretty solid. It's pretty solid. A seven aside, I'm thinking that that's going to be a more open game. You're going to want mobile players. So, yeah, I'll put Bendik in goal. I will put, let's see, I'm also going to use my fingers to count these off. I will say Yoshimaru Yotun would probably be my first overall choice in this situation. I'm going to take Mohamed El-Munir. I'm going to take, I think I'm going to take Amro Terek because I think he's a little more mobile and more speedy as a center back. I will also take Dom Dwyer. So there's my five starting men. I'm going to also take Marta and Alex Morgan. No, I will take Marta and Rachel Hill. I'm going to start young. I want to start a younger, little younger player. I think Rachel Hill will grow into this role. So there's my seven on the field. My bench player, Alex Morgan, and really tempted to say Chris Mueller, but I'm going to say Chris Nikita.
Okay. I like after the month he's had, that's hard to argue
he's
with.
He's obviously good at taking the ball away in midfield and that kind of thing. Also, be really tempting to put Justin Merrill on the bench as well. So, yeah, that's a good exercise. Thank you, Ryan, for the question. It was an interesting one, and we hope that we hope we got it right.
Yeah, so when this actually happens one day, somebody's going to go back and listen to us and they're going to be like, you guys were completely wrong. Oh,
you guys, that was a terrible, terrible lineup. Your lineup terrible got killed. All right, let's get to our email question now from a friend of the podcast, Lee Gavlik, who wants to know, now that Solo, the film, not Hope Solo, has come and gone, which Star Wars character would you now like to see get their own origin movie or prequel?
Ooh, all right. Let's see. Well, I mean, the obvious one for me, I think they may even be considering doing already, which is the Obi-Wan Kenobi movie. But that would be really obvious. So instead, I'm gonna go with the Greedo story.
The Greedo story.
Everything that happens right up till he's shot second.
Well, we know how it ends. That's for sure.
it's an origin story.
Yeah. I don't know how far back we need to go with Obi-Wan since we kind of saw him as a Padawan.
No, I hear you, but that's evidently the one they're doing.
You know, I've heard some talk about Lando Calrissian origin story, which I like that because I want to find out more about this relationship with him and his droid. I do, and that would be interesting, but I think really what interests me would be an origin story, a little bit different type of origin story, maybe Phasma.
Okay.
And I know there's a Phasma book, but I haven't read it, so I don't know if it's good or not, so I don't know if that's and I don't know if it's canon, you know?
Well, and quite possibly one of the most criminally underused new characters in the new trilogy was Phasma.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and I did, you know what? I did read the book Tarkin, and I think Tarkin would make a fantastic movie as well.
I read that book as well. It was excellent. He's and of course, you know, you and I, being of the age that we are and growing up with the original trilogy and having seen it probably hundreds of times. As you were reading it, were you picturing What was it? I
Peter
can't remember
Cushing?
his name. Peter Cushing. Were you picturing him and hearing his voice as you were reading that book? Because I know I was.
Partly, but it's really hard to do when he's young.
Yeah, I was still hearing the voice.
Yeah, I actually did the audiobook, so I was a little disadvantaged on that. So, but yeah, I thought of him when toward the middle and end of the book than at the beginning. But yeah, so that's a good question, Lee. Thank you for asking. Also, a Rogue One prequel would probably be pretty cool too, to get a little bit more backstory there. I think they did a good job of developing those characters and providing some clues and enough information that you need, but it would be nice to maybe see that whole thing unfold, but who knows. But there you go. There's your Ask the Mainland podcast. Anything for this week? Again, you want to email us, it's themainland@gmail.com. Or if you want to hit us up on Twitter, you can do that. Obviously hit us up with the AskTMLPC hashtag, and, at the Mainland, this is who we are. That's where we're at. In fact, I should probably do a search for the hashtag only, because sometimes people forget to at us, you know?
And
that's not necessarily good, because then we might miss something. And it's very easy for something to slip by us. But as I look this up, it looks like AskTMLPC hashtag is almost exclusively being used by the Mainland account. So...
I mean, if you guys are adverse to at the Mainland, you can at Mainland Michael or at Mainland Dave as well.
Yeah. The hashtag's important, though. I mean, you guys are this is
it
the
is
hashtag,
important.
It's the hashtag generation. You guys should be able to do this. More so than us old folks.
Yeah, my kids yell at me whenever I say hashtag.
All right, so that does it for the mailbag this week. We do not have, I just looked right before we started recording, we do not have a new 5-star review, but if you leave us an iTunes review that's 5 stars and say some nice words or whatever you want to say about us, we'll read that on the air. We don't have one this week, though, so we can move on. We have 2 Orlando City matches coming up this week, Dave. Of course, one will be the very day that this podcast drops, and that's Wednesday at Miami United FC. I've seen a lot of angst out there in the Twitterverse and on Facebook about why am I so afraid of this being a loss, because because you have seen the team fall to lower division competition to straight years. That's why. But let's not forget, this is also a team that in the last 5-6 years has been to the quarterfinals twice. So it's not a team that is incapable of going on a run. And an NPSL team, yes, they're playing at home, but I think almost by default, you're going to see the same back line that played at New York City play at Miami, I think, almost because no one else is available. You might see you might see a new left back. You might see PC in there at left back. But I think by and large, you're going to see the same back line mostly that played at New York City.
No, absolutely. Don't look for we talked about guys being back in training. They're not coming back for this match, so don't expect it.
No, I could see maybe a Sutter or a Spectre get a 30 minutes on the field to try to get them back into match shape. Because they are training fully and they have been for over a week, but they haven't got match minutes. They're certainly not ready to step in and do 90. But I could see maybe Jason Christ giving them a half or 30 minutes at the end of the game to get out there and move around and try to get their fitness back. That's a possibility. But I really think we'll see. And Jason said today that he's going to put a strong team out there, and that's just basically code words for I think any lineup I put out there is going to be strong, no matter if it's Pierre Da Silva or Justin Merrim. Right. And I think we are going to see some young players. I think we're going to see Cam Lindley back in the lineup. Mm-hmm. I think we will see. I think there's a good chance Donny Toya may start again at left back, because Jason did mention today that he needs to get Donny more minutes to have him more ready to play, because he did make that error on the first goal against New York City. He wasn't prepared for Tajiri Shradi's move back inside, went sliding right by him and kind of made him look a little bit silly in the process. So we might see Donnie at left back, and maybe that pushes PC up to left midfield, which could cost Pierre de Silva some time, maybe. I think we'll see Richie Larea on the pitch. I expect to see Stefano Pino start at striker.
I was about to say that very thing. Give him some time up there. Let him work on hold up play and whatever else they want to let him work on.
And I see some minutes for Jose Villarreal coming out of this. We saw him for the first time in an Orlando City uniform at New York City late in that game. So he does exist, Dave. We hadn't heard his name since the signing, but there he was. And so I think he'll be on the field at some point as well. Players that I definitely don't think you'll see in the 18 at all would include Bendik, Higuita probably, possibly Rossell. And because I think that there's some good depth there at the defensive midfield position. I think you'll probably see a starting defensive midfield if they go with the 4-2-3-1 of maybe Lindley and Dylan Powers. So I think it's possible that neither Rossell or Higuita play or even Dress. I think it's possible. It's probable Bendik doesn't dress and Grinwis is the backup keeper. I think it's probable that Kleshin doesn't dress. And possibly Merrim. Now, I've seen some people say, well, they need to be out there so they can score against Miami and get their confidence going. And I don't see that happening with a trip to Canada coming right on the heels of this.
No, and you know, some of those guys, they don't need to score against, you know, MPSL to feel like they're getting their confidence back.
Yeah, and honestly, I think Merrim quietly had a pretty decent game for my money. I know people like to point to the times that he loses the ball, and I will point to the fact that he had 5 shots and no one else had more than 1 or 2. And he's able to generate shots. He's able to get his own shots. The thing about it is he's going to lose the ball. That's part of his game. He's brought in to take the ball at defenders. Defenders get paid a lot of money, too, to do what they do. So it's not always going to be successful. But he had 8 dribbles, Dave. 8 on Saturday. And that is, I want to say, 5 more than anyone else on the field for either team. I think everybody else, that the next one was 3. Maxi Morales had 3. I think Chris Mueller had 3. Tony Rocha had 3. So, you know, that's a pretty good ratio for 8, you know, dispossessed 4 times, okay, but 8 dribbles. So he's being successful in doing what he was brought here to do. He was setting up chances. He was
correct.
He was getting shots, you know. They weren't scoring goals, but, you know, he was doing basically what he was brought in to do. And that's part of his game. And he did the same thing at Columbus. The big difference that you see when Dom Dwyer is not there is that it's easier for him to get trapped because those smart runs are not pulling extra defenders away from him. You're looking at a rookie in Chris Mueller. You're looking at a 19-year-old in Josue Coleman, who are not making the runs necessary to pull the defenders away from Merrim, and they're not making runs to get open or to get themselves into a position where Justin can get the ball through the traffic to them. He's going to be selfish sometimes, and he's going to look and see, okay, I know I got that guy out here, but I'm going to take this shot. Sometimes he's going to do that, and players like that, they have to be selfish. That's part of what makes them good at what they do. So, you know, I will defend Justin Merrim on his performance, and I didn't think that he was poor. He could have finished better, certainly. But other than that, he's a little bit handcuffed by what he's out there with. The other three attacking players that he's out there with is Sasha Kleshin, who's a pass-only guy, never shoots, doesn't really get into the box and make those runs. You know, he'll make those side runs down to the sides, where he can operate and make that next pass, but he doesn't generally get into, straight down the middle of the box that often. You got a rookie who still is learning the game. You've got a 19-year-old who still is in a lot of ways learning the game, and maybe they're not going where they need to go or where Justin wants them to go. And that's still a work in progress, but I think that Merrim's, he's all right. I don't think he needs to get his confidence up so much as I think he needs to see a couple more balls go in the net. That's the only thing that's going to help him. And I don't think doing that against an NPSL team is necessarily going to jack up his confidence. So I don't think we see him in the U.S. Open Cup. But you never know.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that Justin, if Justin has a bad game, we'll say something about it. You know, just like earlier, you said that you thought Kleshchen didn't have a good game.
Right.
So it's not that we're gonna, it's not that we're simply going, oh no, you know, Merrim had an okay game. Merrim had okay. No, we're looking at the stats. We're looking at how he played. You know, as we mentioned before, you know, we watch these, you know, with two brains.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, I thought Kleshchen had a poor game. I thought Rosell didn't have his best game. You know, I didn't think that Donny Toya had a very good game. I'll tell you who I thought did and didn't have a good game. That I'm not going to be shy about that. But again, it's one man's opinion. The way I watch the game is probably different than the way other people watch the game. What I consider in my ratings is probably going to be different than what other people consider in their ratings. Some people are very bottom line oriented, and you know, I always think soccer is a low scoring sport. So if you're getting shots or getting chances, I think you're doing a lot right. Now, if you're not finishing them, that's not great, but it's a lot better than if you're not even generating those chances to begin with.
Well, and it also depends on how often you're not finishing those chances, and, you know, and that can, you know, go game to game. I mean, the obvious example that we used in past years was Carlos Rivas. You know, we joked about the Heineken sign. Well, that was the reason it was a joke is because it happened at enough times that it was able to be used as a joke.
Right. Yeah. So the U.S. Open Cup game, I'm not concerned with this game. I think that Orlando City can go down there and win this game, and I think that they will. It's not going to be easy. I mean, Miami United has had a great run so far. They've won three mm-hmm. games in the tournament. None of those games has been a one-goal game. They've all been two or more goal wins. But I think that this is a team that should go down there and dismantle that team. And even with the younger guys playing, I think they should do that. I think that they will. I think that they'll go down and they'll get their victory. And, you know, I think that there was a lot to be said for playing at home the last 2 years that didn't get done. Is that they, yeah, I think sometimes when you're playing at home, maybe it's against lesser competition, maybe it's easier to be complacent than when you're going on the road where you have to have a different mentality. So that's the way I'm looking at it. I could be wrong. We'll see. We'll talk about it next week.
Absolutely.
All right, Dave. So before we get out of here, key matchups and predictions for the Vancouver match. I will not put you on the spot for those two things against Miami United FC, since I've seen zero of their games. I've just only in the last 2 days have even bothered looking at their roster, seeing who's there, and trying to determine, you know, what the quality is. But you know, maybe at some point, I was hoping to get back and watch some streams of their earlier games, and I just haven't had the time. So I'm not going to put you on the spot since I haven't been able to do the homework. I'm assuming you haven't been able to do that homework. And
no, we have full-time jobs.
We'll move on to the Vancouver Whitecaps, home of Breck Shea.
Yes, Breck Shea is there indeed, as is Kai Kamara and some others. But key matchup, guys, so much depends on who comes back and who's playing. I still have to stay with the back line, depending on what that looks like, who's in. You know, hopefully Amro's back. You know, maybe that's bolstered, but even if he is, he's going to be playing with some guys maybe he hasn't played with yet. Like I say, so much depends on that, but it's still, for me, how that back line does against Vancouver's attack. And then score prediction, I'm going to be, you know, Vancouver has been playing fairly well. They've had a lot of draws, so I'm going to say that it's also a draw, and it's going to be 2-2, and that has more to do with who they are than who we are.
You know, that's 2 weeks in a row that you've stolen my score prediction. 2-2.
That's not good.
The 2-2 game was a couple years ago in Vancouver, and mm-hmm. This is a game that I think Orlando City could win if they get the right combination of healthy bodies back. Yep. I don't know if they're going to be quite there by Saturday. My key matchup is going to be the defensive midfield against Christian Teixeira, who's been playing very, very well of late. He's really he's one of those players who he either looks like he's dominating the game or you maybe don't even see him at all. And I think this
Right.
is, needs to be a game where you don't see him at all. Of course, Kai Kamara always gives Orlando City fits, so I see him being able to get on the score sheet. Brekše did the last time we played Vancouver, because of course he did.
Because of course, yeah.
And this is, I think it's maybe optimistic of me to say Orlando City, which has had struggled to score goals, will get two, but also have seen the Whitecaps defense get turned around and turned inside out. And I think that it's long overdue for either Kleshchen or Merrem to get a goal. So I think maybe one of those guys will get one. If Dom plays, I definitely see him getting one.
I would so love to see Dom back and get a goal. That would make my night.
It would make everyone's night. And of course, seeing him in the lineup would be good, because the team is 6-1 with him, and I think 0-5-1 without him. So not good. Not great, Bob, with that with that record, without Tom Dwyer. All right, so there you have it. We'll be back next week, of course, to talk about the Orlando City foray into the U.S. Open Cup, and of course the trip to Vancouver, and we'll prepare for the Montreal Impact. We'll be back to talk about the U.S. women's national team's matches against China, and of course the U.S. men's national team's game at France. We'll answer your questions. We'll read your 5-star reviews on iTunes, as I develop the hiccups late in the program. And of course, we'll have a great interview for you, hopefully, again, another quality player or a guest to discuss things with as we head into the middle of June. So, anything else you need to add, Dave, to this broadcast before we wrap up number 128 and put a bow on it?
All I was going to say is kudos to you on the guest thing. You do a great job of that, and I think everybody should know it.
Well, thank you. I had a little scramble this week, because we had somebody lined up, and then they weren't lined up anymore, and then I had to go out and get somebody else on recording day, and that's never easy. And big thanks to Jackie Maynard for making that happen, and a big thanks to Emily Van Egmond for being with us this week and being, making her first appearance on the podcast. So thanks to everybody involved, and of course, we would invite you to read all of our stuff and get ready for all these matches and read all the recaps and all of the player grades and all those types of things and five takeaways from all of the Orlando City and Pride games. You can do that at themainland.com. Please like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and subscribe to this here podcast. If you're just downloading it randomly, just it really helps us out if you subscribe and leave us a nice review, and that helps us go up the rankings and find a bigger and wider audience. So we appreciate all the evangelizing that you can do on our behalf. And speaking of behalf, on behalf of my co-host David Rowe, I am Michael Citro, founder and managing editor of themainland.com, signing off episode number 128 of the Mainland Podcast by saying, go City, no Pride game this week.